And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Allison Keyes. The White House just responded to the Supreme Court decision to block, at least for now, the Trump administration's plan to deport some Venezuelan migrants being held at a Texas detention center. It says President Trump promised the American people to use all lawful measures to remove the threat of terrorist illegal aliens, and it is confident in the lawfulness of the administration's actions. CBS's Michael Wallace with more.
The early morning order came after the ACLU filed an emergency appeal, arguing the Venezuelan men being held in a Texas detention center have been denied a chance to fight their deportations in court. An attorney for the Justice Department said the men would have at least 24 hours to argue their cases. He said he was unaware of any deportation flights scheduled for today, but the ACLU claims the men were in imminent danger of spending their lives in a horrific foreign prison. Michael Wallace, CBS News.
Remembering those killed in a homegrown terror attack on a federal building in Oklahoma City, former President Bill Clinton says the nation's heart was broken there and spoke at a ceremony this morning.
That truck bomb, as you all know better than I, claimed 168 lives. 19 of them were little children in the building's daycare center.
In Russia, President Putin announced a temporary ceasefire for Easter. Ukraine President Zelensky says attacks are ongoing, but if a complete truce takes hold, he proposes extending it beyond Easter, saying that will reveal Russia's true intentions. Ukrainian Parliament member Lisa Yasko is skeptical of Putin's statement.
Usually during this kind of holidays, especially religious, like Christmas and around New Year time, it never stops Putin. Maybe now for this Easter, he wants to show a sign that I'm doing something, and then maybe he will get sanctions off.
Now to Colorado, where a food pantry started by a migrant is having trouble amid ICE raids despite help from volunteers. CBS's Tori Mason.
Volunteers like Gracie.
There's five of us, my three kids, my husband, and I.
Her family gets one of the hundreds of food bags she packs every week. School lunches help, but like many families, they struggle making ends meet.
At this moment, I do not have a job, so I don't want to stay home doing anything. I'd rather be here helping out.
Easter is pricey this year.
Easter spending is hopping. The National Retail Federation projected $23.6 billion in sales this year. Chocolate prices are up, and inflation has driven up the price of other types of candy. Jared Hill, CBS News, New York.
Some people are decorating rocks and potatoes instead of eggs. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Hi, this is Beth, inviting you to join me for The Kitchen's Open, the show within the show, each Monday morning at 9 a.m. on The Morning Show on WFHR.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tome Olson. Tribal turnout set new records in our state Supreme Court election. Judith Ruiz-Branch has the story.
The Menominee Reservation turnout increased by more than 80% from the spring 2023 election. Both the Red Cliff and Bad River bands of Lake Superior Chippewa saw turnout jump more than 60%, according to Wisconsin Conservation Voices. The group works with tribal communities through its Wisconsin Native Vote program. Organizer Maria Haskins says listening sessions, roundtables, and regional dinners have been crucial in building relationships and getting people to the polls.
With people seeing their peers being more active in the polls and becoming more informed about a lot of these issues is what is really motivating them to go out and cast their ballot, because I think that people are realizing their vote is their voice.
Haskins says communities shared concerns at these events about issues like the opioid epidemic, which is severely affecting tribal communities, while drawing the connections of voting to their goal of tribal sovereignty. The Menominee community has seen some of the most dramatic jumps in voter turnout. In 2023, community voting increased by 75% and has seen a 220% increase since 2019. Haskins says she believes the influx reflects the increased tribes are also seeing in representation, with more Native Americans running for office.
Our people deserve to have a voice in what is happening, and we deserve to have the ability to be involved.
For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz-Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tome Olson.
More news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear for tonight, a low in the low 30s. Increasing clouds for tomorrow, some showers possible in the afternoon and evening, high mid-50s. Still some rain around Monday morning. Mostly cloudy for Monday afternoon, high upper 40s to 50. It's 55 right now.
Pete Schwaba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Milwaukee Film Festival Program Director Kirsten Larson and Tim Sowers from the Overture Center in Madison discusses their new lineup. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba. Weeknights from 6 till 8. Locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin.
For all of Wisconsin.
Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Welcome in to the Civic Media Spotlight. This year, the NFL Draft is being hosted in Titletown. First up on the spotlight this week, we go to Mino and the mayor up in Green Bay, who welcomed on Aaron Popke, the Green Bay Packers Director of Public Affairs, to talk about how they're preparing for the upcoming NFL Draft.
Coming to Northeast Wisconsin live from the Civic Media Studios and featuring TV and radio broadcast veteran John Mino, along with the City of Green Bay's longest serving mayor, Jim Schmidt. This is Mino and the Mayor. Here are your hosts, John Mino and Jim Schmidt.
Hey, thank you very much. Welcome back. Hour number two, Mino the Mayor here at 97.9 FM WGBW, 98.3, 96.5 FM WISS in Appleton and Oshkosh, which is where you'll hear your Milwaukee Brewers tonight take down the Tigers at 6:05 on WISS. Beautiful out there right now, 52 across the board, Oshkosh, Appleton, and Green Bay. Joining us right now, Aaron Popke of the Green Bay Packers. And I've known Aaron since he was like, coming out of Pennings High School, and I never know what your titles are, Aaron, because they change every couple of months or whatever. So what's your title right now heading into the draft?
Draft worker.
draft worker. Right?
Yeah, no, I'm Director of Public Affairs. But you're right. I've been many things over the years, going back to public relations intern.
Exactly.
That was the first one.
Now, we got to talk. We're talking about something else. You were outside of our window harassing us with your bowling form. Showing how we should do it. You're listening. Now, and I said, yeah, I bet you're one of those kids who, you know, bowled when they were young and learned how to score and everything. And you took it a step beyond that, didn't you? As far as when you were in grade school?
Yeah, Notre Dame Middle School in De Pere, part of our gym class. And Larry DeClean was our teacher.
Oh, Larry.
God bless Larry.
Yep.
Now passed, but what a guy he was. But part of our gym classes, we learned how to score. Bowling, so I can help you guys with that.
There you go.
And then we would walk from Notre Dame Middle School right over to Century Lanes, right on Broadway in De Pere. That was our gym class.
That's awesome.
For a period of time.
That's so cool.
All right, so 25 years with the Packers, right?
This upcoming season will be my 33rd.
Okay.
But thank you for 25.
All right. Well,
he didn't pay attention to you for the first 8. Yeah.
Well, that's a whole other show.
You look like it's 25.
No.
It's a big deal. You've been working at it, but you've been on the show a couple times. You've been on my show a couple times. How do you feel? We're, 11 days away?
Yeah, we're excited. We were talking off air, but the campus is coming alive. And this goes back. I was just looking a couple weeks ago, the very first survey of interest that the NFL asked. So in 2015, it was in Chicago that April.
Yeah.
That fall, Peter O'Reilly, the executive vice president for the stuff at the NFL, sent out a memo to all the clubs, like, we're taking this on the road. So in fall, September 30th, we had submitted 2015, okay, our first survey of interest for the NFL draft.
So 2015.
2015. Mark Murphy, when they said the memo came around, Mark said, hey, we need to do this. So it's been literally going back to fall of 2015 where we've been thinking about it. Fast forward to April of 2025, to see the campus get built out in the last couple of weeks has been amazing. The lot shut down at Lambeau so they could stage all the equipment. I equated as we were looking out the window from our offices, just watching this happen, when you get that new Lego set when you're a kid and you open the box and you take out all the pieces, you lay them out, and then you start building it.
Yeah.
And that's what it's looked like. They raised the roof on the draft theater last week and everything's starting to fill in. It's really amazing. The energy and electricity is exciting.
And that's the stage on Oneida. And I think a lot of people have driven by there. If not, they've seen it, you know, on YouTube or the things that you've been promoting. But talk about, we talked about, is it like a Super Bowl? But Super Bowl has so many activities going on. But that's akin to what you're doing. Talk about some of the things besides the actual draft. I mean, things open up at noon, right? Around your campus? Or
yeah. The Thursday, Friday right. opens at noon. Saturday open at 9. Actually, on Saturday, some more of the information's been announced. But Saturday morning at 8 a.m., we're going to do, and we probably talked about this, leaning into the unique traditions of Green Bay and the Packers, the bike kids. You know, that tradition right. that goes yeah. back to 58. That was part of our bid process, just leaning into that tradition. Cool. And there's some things going on around it. But Saturday morning, we're going to do a bike parade through the draft campus. And the campus stretches, as you said, the theater's on Oneida Street on the east side, that parking lot. But across the north end of Lambeau Field, over to the west side parking lot, then to Titletown is the draft experience.
Right.
And Lambeau Field's going to be part of the campus. So I think for people that are going to come and just walk around and soak up the energy, you can watch the draft in the theater, you know, straight on that huge structure. But then you go into Lambeau Field and you can sit inside Lambeau, sit in the bowl, watch the draft on the screens. And then you can wander over and into the draft experience on the west side over into Titletown. There's going to be big screens up everywhere, food, beverage, activities, autographs, all sorts of stuff for the kids and adults, these galleries that are going to be set up. Cliff Crystal's doing a history of the draft, which will be new to the draft experience. Just with
I just want to say that one of the things that you just said was a separator between, you know, if you're hosting something for the city gym, what can you do different than Philly or whatever, whatever? That whole thing about walking into the bowl on the day of the draft into Lambeau, I think that really sets this apart from others, wouldn't you?
Yes. I think just what Lambeau Field means right. to football fans in
exactly.
general, certainly
exactly.
to us near and dear, but football fans, it's often spoken of as the Mecca. It's on a bucket list, those types of things. Very true. I think the NFL really liked the idea of incorporating Lambeau into yep. this because they can lean into the history, the tradition. We often hear, if we're not someone's favorite team, we're their second favorite team.
Or bucket list just to see it. You know, just to,
yeah.
I mean, I'd love to see Fenway. I've never seen Fenway Park, and I hope to see Fenway Park someday.
And, you know, and we talked about this many times, but that is a bucket list thing for people. And it's amazing. And Fenway Park, Notre Dame, I mean, those are things that are on their list.
Yankee State, well, that's been renovated, but I mean, you know, Wrigley. Those iconic right. ones you still right. want
to. Really cool to see. In the bowl, you have, and we can get this information. There's a couple things I want to make sure that people who are listening, that to get that one pass. I mean, I think a lot of people are getting that, but it's really important. It's so easy to do, but people have to get that to get in so, you know, that the lines run smooth. But talk a little bit about the bowl. You're going to have activities in there as well. Don't you kind of honor Wisconsin?
Yeah, the bowl on Thursday prior to the draft getting started, they're going to do the red carpet. Right. Where the prospects come in and kind of a photo op media session. It's about celebrating them and giving them a moment. But that's going to be down on the sideline in Lambeau Field. So we'll be able to see that on TV. It's not open.
The first time those guys have been there.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Absolutely. Unless someone rolled through.
Or a workout. Yeah.
But we're excited about that. That'll be neat. And then there's going to be some activity. So that's more of a closed event, but it'll be televised and those types of things. But stay tuned for details on that. But also during the days of the draft, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, there's going to be activities inside Lambeau. You can watch right. the draft,
right.
but there's also going to be other activities that you can participate in inside Lambeau. So stay tuned for that on OnePass, where you need to download that. It's got all the info you're going to need to register for the draft, but then the schedule is going to be in there. So you can really set your days, what you want to do each day when you come out to the campus.
Got a question here for you real quick here. The original bid was put in 9.5 years ago. Green Bay was awarded 1.5 years ago. Were there subsequent bids put in, or did the Packers know they were eventually up on the horizon?
Good question. Yes to all of that. But early on, I was just simply saying, hey, we want to be considered. And then it got to a certain point where the NFL, and you know, we didn't know if we were going to be seriously considered. But when they came back to us and said, hey, we'd like to submit a formal bid, that's where like,
wow.
So that turned in from a three-page essay, I joke, because one of the questions on an initial survey of interest was, in 1,000 words or less, explain why Green Bay and Lambeau Field would be a great host for the draft. So I wrote up this essay and sent it in. And since then, obviously, then it became the one-inch binder of information, the three-inch binder of information. And then we actually put in bids for years, like a specific year, like 22 or, you know, those first years we're interested in 18, 19. And then we put in formal bids for, say, like 19 and then 20. We had COVID, so it got pushed. And then when the Rush Expo was getting built, we actually held off on a specific year while that was getting constructed. And then we went for the subsequent years. Mm-hmm. So then it was 25, and we were thinking maybe 27, but then we were getting a little indication that 25 could be the year, so we sharpened our pencil and made sure we got more information in.
And on that bid, that included more than just the Packers, right? You had municipalities that were part of that?
Yeah, for this type of event, it's typically like the city's commission that handles big events, like Detroit was Visit Detroit, and other cities it was their local CVB. And we've got a great one in Discover Green Bay with Brad Toll, Nick Miser, Beth, and that whole team there. They've great. So we partnered with them. We put together a local organizing committee, which also included the team from PMI, the team that runs the Resch Complex. They were a very key part of it. So the three organizations, Packers, Discover Green Bay, PMI, was our local organizing committee. And PMI did all the work with the Resch Expo, and because that's a key part of this in terms of the facilities, the green room, the Prospect Green Room is in the Expo Center. The media center's there. The Resch Center arena is part of a contingency backup place. So that whole space is so key. And that team over there has been fantastic. And Discover Green Bay was so helpful with locking down hotel rooms. So it really was a team effort. And the Packers, this one's unique because it's the NFL team typically hasn't gotten that involved with the bid. Right. It's more the CVB. But because of our unique community, and you know, we don't have the size and scope that the larger ones do, it had to be a unique team that got put together. And we knew we had to lead the effort, and we put together our host committee, which raised the money. The Packers are in for a lot of cash and a lot of in-kind. So big team effort, absolutely.
We're with Aaron Pomke, director of the NFL Draft.
So you've been at this for longer than a year and a half.
Title. But, I just gave you a new title. Did you hear that?
Oh, yeah.
Aaron Pomke, director of the NFL Draft.
Director of the draft. Ceremonial director of the draft.
Hope Roger's not in town. He'll just spit up his coffee.
Well, we got a few directors of the draft.
Right. You're going to need a new title next Sunday, though, because it's all over. And you've been at this for really 4 years. You've been to the last four drafts, right? Did you say that?
Or? Yeah, I've been to a number of them. Yeah.
Okay. Any surprises? And I know you're not going to tell me the truth, but are there anything you're concerned about? I mean, this is coming up. I mean, this is 11 days away, and you know, there's people like, where are people going to park? Is the traffic going to be okay? Do you think we've ironed out pretty much everything?
I think so. We've got updated maps that just got posted last night and this morning. Discover Green Bay has some good maps, Packers.com. The One Pass certainly has information that gets you those maps. I think we've spent some time figuring out the best way to flow traffic in and out. I think that people just need to do their homework and absorb, and we can talk more about that.
Yeah, let's the backside.
We got to start a quick break. We'll be back with more with Director of Public Affairs for the Green Bay Packers, Aaron Pomke, talking all things draft. Back right after this.
Mino and the Mayor is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WISS and WGBW weekday mornings from 6 until 9. To learn more about this show and all of Civic Media's programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. In recent months, Milwaukee health officials have uncovered significant lead hazards in city schools, mostly due to lead-based paint. Several schools have now been closed as the problem has been found to be more widespread. In late March, city officials formally requested help from the CDC, but in doing so, they learned that the CDC's entire lead program had been eliminated by Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. This is a major problem. Children in the state's largest city are being exposed to lead poisoning at their schools, and the Trump administration is not only refusing to provide assistance, they are eliminating the entire lead program that would help in cases like this one.
Now, state and local officials must step up to do something for these kids, since Trump and RFK Jr. are gutting federal support. Milwaukee's children deserve better.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Next up on the Civic Media Spotlight, we go to the John and Gordy Show. John and Gordy welcomed on Kara Ogburn, Artistic Director for the Milwaukee Film Festival, coming up in a couple weeks. They talk about some of the Wisconsin-made movies that you can go see, as well as some others on topics ranging from music to Pizza Hut.
This portion of the show is being brought to you by noses. Yes, when wanting to stick something in other people's business, more people use their noses than any other part of their face. Noses, available wherever olfactory body parts are sold.
Well, we have a president like that now, micromanaging an entire country with his weird, wacky ideas.
Well, let's set aside politics for just a few minutes here.
No, I can't do that.
Come on, John.
All right, I'll try.
It's John and Gordy in the morning, along with producer Sam. It's 7:35. Time for us to welcome in Kara Ogburn from the Milwaukee Film Festival. She's the artistic director there. Good morning, Kara.
Good morning.
Good to have you with us here. Give us an overview of the film festival. First of all, it starts up next week, right? From when?
One week away from opening night. The festival starts on the 24th with the film Sally, a documentary about Sally Ride made by a Milwaukee native filmmaker, Christina Costantini, and a block party that takes over that space at North and Farwell, where around the Oriental. And then two straight weeks of movies at the Oriental and Downer, over 200 films.
Wow.
More films than you can possibly see.
Yes.
I challenge you.
Okay, we'll take that challenge. We're going to take off a couple of weeks, Gordy.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, you got to take off 2 weeks.
Yes, what the heck. Well, let's talk about some of the ones that deal with Wisconsin. What about there's a Brady Spreed documentary? Brady Spreed?
Yeah. So it's a new documentary. I believe that the public world premiere is at our festival. This is a film that comes out of UWM's DocuWM program with Sean Kafer as the director of that program and of the film. And it tells the story about the history of Brady Street, kind of through its initial immigrant rises, its initial population surges, the kinds of industry that built up around Brady Street with tanneries, and then the changes that have undergone the neighborhood through different kind of moments of change. We were talking a little about you being at some of those Brady Street festivals.
Oh, yeah.
You'll see that in the film, but also what's happening today on Brady Street, which continues to, of course, be like a vibrant through line for the city. A lot of history and cool shops always. I think there's always been cool stuff on Brady.
Oh, yeah. Well, definitely. No, it was quite the festival. A lot of strange people showed up for the Brady Street Festival. Does any of that go on today? Is that still kind of continued? Do they have the head shops?
That's much more normal and happens kind of all over, right?
Oh, right. So, yeah. Well, yeah, I guess it's
right. The weirdness has infused everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But Brady Street Festival, they're planning a couple of upcoming new festivals through their bid. I know that I've been seeing on my social media for the summer. Mm. So
yeah,
it's a good way to sort of think about streets. I'm sure Madison has similar kinds of streets that have always kind of had vibrancy and life.
State Street.
We're broadcasting right from one of those places.
Exactly.
State Street. Kara, I wanted to ask you about the one about Wisconsin Dells. It's just called Dells, right?
Yeah. So, the film is called The Dells. When you're going to our program book or online, alphabetical, can't miss it, The Dells. This is Nelly Kluse's documentary. It's a pretty Verite-style documentary that explores the world of the J-1 visa, young people who come to work at The Dells and basically make the water park capital come alive and thrive in the summer for tourists and, from around the state and around the country to have a good time. And it really explores kind of their life, which I think one doesn't get to see. What does it look like to come to the Wisconsin Dells in the Wisconsin, a state in the United States you may never have thought of living in Bulgaria or other places, and living there and working there and experiencing a version of the American dream?
Well, actually, Gordy worked there for quite a while.
Having been in the Dells a number of years over my life, I know the J-1 students, they come to get jobs and to live there and work there, and they're housed there. And many times they don't speak the language sometimes, and there's some issues there. I know during the pandemic, some of them got stuck in the Dells, and their visas ran out. They couldn't go anywhere. They didn't have places to live. It was really quite an experience. I'm sure that's an interesting movie. I'd like to check it out myself.
Yeah, I wonder if you're in it, you know. From the
I don't think I'm in it, but I think they would have notified me. But
you would have known.
Perhaps, yeah.
What are some of the movies that you think people who might be interested in watching?
Absolutely. So we don't have a movie about beer this year, but we do have a movie about cocktails. It's called Bar, and it follows bartenders from around the country participating in the Bar 5 program, which is kind of a like training school certification for mixologists. Mm-hmm. If you love Top Chef, you'll love this. And you watch kind of the craft and the art, but also the science and the history of cocktails kind of come together in Bar, playing mostly the first weekend of the festival. And the filmmaker will be in attendance from the Bay Area for that one. I also love to talk about the film. It's called Slice of Life, The American Dream in Former Pizza Huts. It's a film that's about Pizza Hut, Pizza Hut's rise, Pizza Hut's iconic architecture, mm-hmm. and then businesses that have taken over former Pizza Huts to make a new kind of community, whether it's a marijuana shop in Colorado, a queer-friendly church in Florida, there's a karaoke bar, there's restaurants of all shapes and sizes. The filmmakers will also be here for that. They tell me, and it didn't make the film, but the most interesting former Pizza Hut in the Milwaukee area is a veterinary clinic.
Oh,
wow. Really? Okay.
Well, you know, what's really important is seeing these movies in these great theaters, the Downer Theater and the Oriental. I mean, these are really classic, fantastic theaters in Milwaukee. Could you fill us in on that?
You know, and you know, as a nonprofit, it was important for us to kind of preserve history while also continuing to provide great movies every single day and modern amenities like beer at the movie theaters. best popcorn in town. We've got brewer's yeast, you know, really trying to make theater going. You remember what theater going used to be in the 1920s when the Oriental Theater opened. You know, people would get dressed up. This was your social activity for the week. Now you might see more people in Uggs and sweatpants than gowns, but still a great way to escape your everyday life, see the life of someone else, travel the world. And the film festival does all that like for 2 weeks, jam packed.
We're talking with Kara Ogburn from the Milwaukee Film Festival. A couple of music movies here that I wanted to find out a little bit more about. One about Janis Ian called Breaking Silence, and then the other one, the John and Yoko movie, which was here at the Wisconsin Film Festival here in Madison last week or so. Can you mention a little bit about those movies, Kara?
Yeah. So if you're looking for music docs, our Sound Vision program is the place to go. Documentaries about, Janis Ian, John and Yoko. Usually the name of the musical artist is in the title of these ones, so it's a good clue.
Yeah.
Whoever you like, our programmer for that program, Abby, really looks for kind of a breadth of musical genres so that every music fan has something to find. The Janis Ian film is a really special one. Everyone saw A Complete Unknown over the holidays. Mm-hmm. And this takes you back to that same place and introduces you to some of the people who maybe didn't get to be played by Timothée Chalamet. And also to hear from the real folks. Joan Baez is featured. We showed a Joan Baez doc last year. She's here again to talk about the impact that Janis Ian had, who's a little less known. You know her voice, but you might not know her name. And here you can spend a little bit more time learning her story and learning about her impact.
Tell us, for folks who want to go to the festival, a little bit more about how they can get tickets and where they can go for more information.
Yeah.
Tickets are on sale now. They went on sale to the public, individual tickets yesterday. And if you're watching 2 weeks of movies, we still do have passes, all access passes on sale for you.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. And again, the film or the website is mkefilm.org. Correct, Kara?
Yep, correct. Good job.
Very good. All right.
Very good.
Well, thank you.
We appreciate you being with us.
See you in the movies.
Yeah.
We will be back to wrap things up on John and Gordy in the morning right here at WMDX. Stay with us.
The John and Gordy Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WMDX weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. Locally grown radio, WFHR.
CBS News Brief. The U.S. Supreme Court today temporarily blocking the deportation of Venezuelans who are being held under an 18th century wartime law. Legal expert Lori Levinson.
Didn't decide the merits of whether these individuals can stay or whether they've gotten a proper hearing. But the Supreme Court says we need more time.
A ceremony today marked 30 years since the Oklahoma City bombing. Clutching a teddy bear, Austin Allen said his father was one of 168 people who died when a federal building blew up.
This is a special bear. This was given to us by the U.S. government. And it was given to all the families of the bombing.
Russian President Vladimir Putin today announcing an Easter ceasefire in the war in Ukraine. The BBC's Paul Moss.
Ukraine's President Zelensky said it was drones in the sky which showed Vladimir Putin's true attitude to Easter.
The ceasefire ends Easter night. CBS News Brief.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
The Bucks lose to the Pacers. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks losing game one of their playoff series to the Pacers in Indiana, 117-98. Although Giannis Antetokounmpo led the Bucks with 36 points, the Pacers did a good job from being a playmaker and getting assists. And he didn't get much help from his teammates. Brooke Lopez, Kyle Kuzma had a combined 4 points at the half. Damian Lillard talking for the first time after suffering that blood clot.
It was a little bit scary. You know, I think I've had a couple surgeries in my career. You know, I've had things that I've had to deal with, you know, ankle or knee, Achilles, calf, whatever it might be, you know, but those are all things that you go to rehab, you know, you deal with it like that, you know, like an athlete would. So, you know, I'm thinking that's what I was going into. And then you see you have a blood clot. And obviously that's a thing that can affect your life. You know, I'm just happy to be on the other side of it.
Baseball, the Brewers and the A's, game two of their 3-game series tonight at American Family Field. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear for tonight, a low in the low 30s. Increasing clouds for tomorrow, some showers possible in the afternoon and evening, high mid-50s. Still some rain around Monday morning. Mostly cloudy for Monday afternoon, high upper 40s to 50. Right now it's 53.
You know that tune. You're a star. You know stuff. Why not win stuff? Maybe it's stuff about TV or movies, but still, you shine at useless information. And WFHR and Culver's want to reward you.
Welcome back.
Join the morning show Fridays for a chance to win one value basket and a kid's meal. Be our next superstar with Culver's Star of the Day every Friday at 97.5 FM WFHR.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. While corrosive democracy news from Washington continued this week, state news ranged from good in Delaware and Mississippi, mixed in North Carolina and Pennsylvania, to downright ugly in New Hampshire. Voting Rights Lab reports the Delaware Senate advanced SB 2 and SB 3, constitutional amendments allowing 10 days of early voting and no excuse absentee voting. Legislative versions of both bills passed last year, but the Delaware Supreme Court found that the state constitution didn't enable them. The General Assembly must pass them again next year for them to be adopted. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals ordered Mississippi to redraw state Senate districts for DeSoto County, which it found violated the 1965 Voting Rights Act by diluting a majority black section of the county, according to Mississippi Today. State officials in North Carolina found fewer issues among the 5,000 military and overseas voters than the Supreme Court candidate Jefferson Griffin claimed, but the highly questionable post-election review of voter eligibility continues. Pennsylvania Attorney General Dave Sunday appealed a federal court ruling directing county officials to count otherwise eligible mail-in ballots without a date. The New Hampshire Senate advanced SB 213, which would require voters applying by mail for an absentee ballot to enclose a copy of their birth certificate, U.S. passport, or naturalization papers, almost certainly disenfranchising otherwise eligible voters. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. We'll review the weekend news, and Jimmy Cuska, Civic Media Sports Director, will be here to talk about changes coming to the WIAA. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
We return you now to the Civic Media Spotlight, and up next, we'll hear a segment from Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Pat welcomed on State Representative Lee Snodgrass of Appleton. She talks about her new bill aiming to tighten the existing ban on outright voter bribery in the wake of the Supreme Court election this month. She and Pat think that actions by Elon Musk and other billionaires, including giving away $1 million checks to voters, shouldn't be allowed.
I know you're half expecting to see Lester Holt or something right about here. This is the election theme that NBC News has been using since 1976. And we play it here because this is the anniversary of the birth of Henry Mancini. And Henry Mancini composed this. He had a theme for NBC Nightly News that was used throughout a big chunk of the 1970s, along with all the movie tracks and the shows and the hits that made the charts back in the 1960s, all coming from one very prolific composer, Henry Mancini, who'd been born on this day. All right. If you know nothing else about me, and about Up North News, and about this radio show, it is that our mission in life is to overcome this particular mindset. State politics is boring. The legislature's boring. The state budget is boring. Nobody wants to talk about this. And then people like me step in and say, wait a minute. The state budget, the state legislature, takes the money that we pay in taxes, sales taxes, income taxes, fees, everything else, and can do a lot of really important good stuff with that. Things that are good for our kids, for our schools, for our healthcare, for our infrastructure. Or they can, you know, put it down a rat hole, shall we say. And those things don't just happen. Those decisions aren't some kind of predestined magic depending on who's in the legislature. Lobbying still does some good, and not just the lobbyists with, you know, nice suits and all that, but the lobbying with a lowercase L that's done by grassroots groups, by constituents, by members of these groups, and by some amazingly dedicated people who want to make sure that our state legislature is doing things with our resources that make our state a great place to live. And two of the people who do that perhaps more actively and with more passion than almost anybody I know join us for another visit with an update on their lowercase L lobbying of the legislature. Robert Craig from Citizen Action and Heather Dubois-Bornon from Wisconsin Public Education Network. Good morning to both of you. How are you?
I'm good.
All right. And Heather, I think that you are on mute, but you jump off of there and you say good morning whenever you like as well. There you are. How are you?
I was just saying good morning. Good morning, Pat. Good morning, Robert.
It's so nice to have you guys back here. Tony up in Ashland puts it on YouTube. Well, who cares if we have daycare or roads or we clear cut the forests? Not important at all. Sarcasm, he says. And it's so true. These things matter. You know what? I actually want to start there. If I'm going to start all highfalutin like this, I'm going to do this. Heather, why do you do what you do? You could do a lot of other things. Why are you so passionate about doing this gig, advocating for the education of our kids?
I want to pick up from what you said, Pat. Why should we care? There are so many things that people care about, but nobody has time to care about all the things. So we need to focus on the things that we care about the most, and then partner with others who care about the other things that we care about so that we can all get all the things that we actually need in our budgets, in our schools, in our communities, in our families and homes, and make sure that we are fighting together for all the things it really takes to make for thriving communities. It's really such a simple principle, and I'm just driven by a desire to see better across our communities and to demand better of leaders who seem content to ensure that we don't have the conditions to thrive where we live in Wisconsin.
And Robert, I know you like me. We like to talk about the policies, the issues, rather than ourselves. But I mean, you have been also a leader in the grassroots field for so long. Why? What motivated you to start doing all this in the first place?
And you made a distinction, rightly so, Pat, between small L lobbyists and the ones in the fancy suits. They're called contract lobbyists, and some of them are very nice people. You and Heather and I know them, Pat, but they're mercenaries. They're hired guns, and they're working for people, organizations, corporations that have a big interest in government. It isn't for the common good, right? So the lobbyists like Heather and I, we're working for grassroots groups of people that are not in it for themselves. They're in it for their communities and for the common good. So Heather mentioned education. I would just say on healthcare, we have the most expensive and unaffordable healthcare system in the world, and a lot of people are left out. The only reason a lot of people have access to healthcare is because of what our federal and state government do. And they're making decisions right now that affect whether people have a fundamental right. And if you don't have access to health and good healthcare, then you can't live a life of freedom and being able to pursue your own destiny and your own dreams. Health is everything. And the state budget is going to have a huge influence on that, particularly the decision on whether or not to finally expand Badger Care in Wisconsin.
So we're going to get in more of this with healthcare and with education in a moment. But I want to, Robert, start with you on something that we talked about in the last hour in our climate check segment. And at the risk of oversimplifying things, I talked about the impression that I had in something like wetlands protection. And that now that is seen as a relatively bipartisan issue. The New York Times had a story about the Journal Sentinel had a story about how Wisconsin's become this bipartisan model because of a bill that passed unanimously that offered grants to protect wetlands as a way of mitigating against flash floods as part of climate change. And I said, wait a minute. When I ran for the legislature 20 years ago, one of the things that I always heard from the other side of the political fence was mocking the idea of protecting wetlands. They would put like a canoe in a dry culvert and say, how is this a navigable body? You fast forward 20 years, and now you have a much more of a bipartisan view on the value of wetlands. And I say all this, Robert, just to say when people go, why do you do this? Isn't everything already predestined, predetermined? And my argument would be, no, you are constantly talking to who's ever in the legislature at the time, hoping to bit by bit change their mind to see the value on things. And if it weren't going to work, why would we be doing any of this anyway? Do you share at least a little of that optimism about the long view of the Wisconsin legislature?
Yeah, I think we can, even in this incredibly polarized environment where you have two parties that are very divided on issues, you can make some kind of progress that way. And there's certainly been some on wetlands, and that is in the public good, because as long as you have a divided government, Democratic governor, Republican legislature, and it could be vice versa in the future, then you're going to have to move certain things, what you can, with agreement of both parties. But I don't want to get overly excited about that, because there are limits, right? We still have a Republican president who is busy gutting all of our environmental laws, and I certainly don't see any Republicans in the state legislature speaking out about that or talking about the state stepping up in order to fill that breach.
No, that's very true. And so, but again, still in the, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take, Heather, when it comes to, let's turn just to education. And where have we left things off with you in terms of the Joint Finance Committee is currently doing its public hearings around the state? And the last time that we had you and Robert on here, it was, you know, what do you want people to say at these hearings? What do you want them to say to their legislators? How would you characterize the way that the budget debate is going right now and what people can be doing to make a difference?
Well, people have turned out in droves to tell their stories and to share their budget priorities at the first two hearings of the Joint Finance Committee, which were held day after the election on April 2, and then the Friday of that week in the southern and eastern parts of the state. And that committee now goes north. They're having two more public hearings on the 28th and 29th, where people can go up to Hayward or Wausau on the 28th and 29th to testify. And we have been tracking every word of their testimony. If you go to wisconsinnetwork.org/budget, you will see a link to our testimony tracker, where we sit on the other end of Wisconsin Eye and literally write down every single thing that people come to testify about. And the reason that we do that is so that we can report to people what those priority needs were. And here's what we found. Top two issues across the board at both of these hearings are the things that are best for kids, public education, K through 12 and higher ed, and pre-K and childcare needs, and healthcare, specifically Medicaid expansion. And we had more testimony in those two categories than pretty much all the other categories combined, with a bunch of single issue things too. You can see a chart reflecting that on our Facebook page. I just put the link to that in our chat so you can share it with your listeners. And we know that people are in a desperate situation. You've got 2 minutes to share your concerns at these hearings, but when you tell your story in a way that really shows what this means to your kids, your community, your family, and yourself, then that can resonate with lawmakers and also let folks know that our priority concerns are shared across the state, across Wisconsinites, and we expect our lawmakers to share them too when they decide on their priority budget allocations.
It really was an interesting graph to see. It's a pie chart basically, based on what people's priorities were. Robert, no surprise to you that it was education and healthcare that people see as their highest priorities.
No surprise at all. And both are greatly threatened. Our schools have been shortchanged for a very long time by this legislature. Healthcare has been shortchanged by not expanding Medicaid, which is the basic thing to do that because 41 other states have done it. But there's even more to be done on healthcare. And a lot of the testimony on healthcare is also terrified of the federal effort to have permanent tax cuts, $4.5 trillion to $6.5 trillion worth of them for corporations and for billionaires, and to pay for it by taking healthcare away from millions of people. So these are fundamental needs. I think what's really important about what Wisconsin Public Education Network and Heather are doing here with tracking everything is you see the disconnect between where people are and where elected officials are. In a well-functioning democracy, there'd be a much closer match. It would matter. And this is not the first legislative cycle where education and healthcare were the top issues, where that would matter in the deliberations of the legislature. And you know something's broken when that doesn't happen, when legislators who are supposed to represent the public don't reflect what the public is actually asking for and wants.
Holy, Robert, you're right. I'm going to look at the chart here. And again, public K-12 education, childcare, Medicaid expansion, healthcare, prisons, farming, municipal services. You know what? I don't see anything in there about trans athletes. You're right. And I don't see anything in there about DEI or CRT. Heather, it seems like the some of the politicians may have one set of priorities, but it really sounds like you've got the people on your side in terms of what they think our legislators should be working on.
Yeah, and this sort of grassroots tracking is just one way that we have of keeping them honest. We want to make sure that the priority concerns that actually impact us in our everyday lives are the ones that we're prioritizing at the State House and beyond too. And if our lawmakers aren't going to do that on their own, then it's really up to us to apply that grassroots pressure for them to do better and signal that we're going to demand better elected officials if they aren't going to pass a better budget. That's why we're so concerned and working closely together across all of these important issues to make sure the budget that does get passed into law is one that meets our needs. As you know well, Pat, we're in year 16 of budgets that haven't even kept pace with inflation for public schools. We have failed to meet the needs of our communities in terms of providing help for healthcare or childcare needs and in so many other areas. And if this budget doesn't deliver on those things, I don't think the governor should sign it.
And we're going to get into that more in a next visit because we've run out of time here. But I know we were talking off air about the potential of the governor vetoing a budget as opposed to a line item veto, or Republicans in the legislature refusing to pass a budget bill unless, they try to extort a larger tax cut for the wealthy from the governor. A lot of that is the kind of the process stuff that we'll cover in another time. But for now, if you want to get any of those comments out to your legislators, the email address again is budget.comments@legis.wisconsin.gov. That's for legislature. And of course, you can also go to the Citizen Action website, citizenactionwi.org. And the Wisconsin Public Education Network is at wisconsinnetwork.org/budget to learn more. Robert Craig, Heather Dubois-Bornon, thank you so much as always for the updates. Always appreciate it. Thanks for all you do. Have a great day.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Thank you. When we come back, we'll talk to Todd Alba, see what's coming up on his program next. This is Up North News Radio on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow is affiliated with the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
It's the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. Could coal make a comeback in Wisconsin? Pollution and high costs have pushed utilities to start shutting down coal plants across the state. But the Trump administration has announced emergency orders to boost coal, including offering power plants a two-year exemption from requirements to reduce emissions of toxic chemicals like mercury, arsenic, and benzene. April 22nd marks the 55th anniversary of Earth Day. Back in 1970, Wisconsin Senator Gaylord Nelson called for an environmental day of action that inspired 20 million Americans to take to the streets and demand protections from environmental contamination. Less than 8 months later, Congress created the EPA. Knowledge is power. For a deep dive into environmental issues in Wisconsin, check out my Defender podcast at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Wrapping up the first hour of this week's Civic Media Spotlight, we go to Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Pete welcomed on Mike Starr, legendary actor this week, known for his roles in Goodfellas and Dumb and Dumber, among others. They delve into Starr's diverse ethnic background, his iconic ad-libs on set, and his love for Chicago. Mike also shares anecdotes about working with Scorsese and De Niro, revealing the meticulous improvisation process behind Goodfellas.
Welcome back to Nightlight. Ladies and gentlemen, great to have you with me on this Wednesday night. Here, I am Pete Schwabba, your host. Our question of the night is, if you were the lead in a romantic comedy, who would you want to play your co-star? Jim from Appleton says, the person I would want as my co-star would have to be Jennifer Lawrence. That's excellent choice, Jim.
Great one.
Great one. I didn't even think of her earlier. All right, this is exciting, folks. Mike Starr is here, legendary Mike Starr, with so many credits. He's been part of such great movies. I think we got him on the stream now. So if you're watching on the stream, you can see Mike. Wow, a lean, mean fighting machine, Mike, if I do say so myself. Wow, that's impressive,
the
dude.
Back trail here.
Yeah.
Reinventing myself.
I love it. Days. It's great to have you here tonight, and I'm glad we got the stream figured out. But stream, phone, it doesn't matter. It's just great to talk to you.
I just want to say quickly hello to them, with my family, my kids and grandchildren out in Chicago and Naperville, and my friends, Drew Moran's family out in Minnesota, John Bream, my childhood friend, who else? We got Wisconsin, Todd, who trains the Bosa brothers. He may not be out there, but his family's out there, and Who else? So I got it. I just wanted to make sure. And Coley from Galway in Chicago, and all my friends. I spent the greatest times of my life in Chicago. Some of the greatest times, and have a whole world there. So I just want to make sure I got that. Tim O'Brien from Vienna, the Chicago hot dog people.
Oh, that's a great place. Well, thanks for getting the word out. That's fantastic.
Oh, I have to.
Yeah,
you got the world of. When the iconic place Stanley's, God rest his soul, Donnie Cruz and Chef Luigi from Francesca's, which my son still does a stint there every now and then. We have so many people that there's a couple of friends that are not around, but Stanley's, that's how I met Chris Chelios and Ryan Dempster and all these people.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, it was a whole great world out in Chicago. And you know, and Dennis Farina and Joe Mantegna, who I'm still in touch with, Dennis Farina from Chicago, and some of the best experiences. I hope I'm not leaving anyone out. So many really great times and great experiences. And I was fortunate enough to work there. And my wife also, UIC, but also University of Chicago, the Children's Hospital. She was a pediatric heart surgeon. So
oh my gosh.
There's quite some interesting times and a history for me in a very special place. So I wanted to say that.
Fantastic. You might get a kick out of this. Dennis Farina was my Little League coach. His son Mike and I were classmates, and he and my dad were the coaches. And I ran into him a few times out in L.A. Just had really nice talks with him. A good guy.
One of the greatest guys ever. Yeah. God bless. God bless.
So I wanted
I'm sorry. So but I was talking about the comedy
yeah.
that Martin Scorsese I guess I was lucky every time he did a trivia thing or asked about, because I spent time, you know, old films, what they would, we would call old films, but the respect he has for it, but even TV and comedies. And every now and then he would just quiz me and I'd be lucky to answer. But a lot of that improv came out of a freedom. You know, we would just work together and then all of a sudden, you know, Ray would say, oh, I have to get this line in, whatever, you know. And on top of that, then we went with department heads, you know, the cinematographer, et cetera. And then finally the whole crew. And then we did it. So it wasn't like we just walked on that. That's why I want to give so much credit. It was like you felt so free. And then when you did it, hey, feel free. So one take, I said, the commandant, I called myself. And Martin Scorsese said, he said, Mike, the commandant, said, well, it's 1968. How did the Vietnam War? Because the Air France heist was the one that Frenchie was the main guy in before Lufthansa 10 years later, which I snuck in a lot. I have a thing about improvising correctly for the period if I'm lucky and fortunate. And I just said, well, you know, that my generation grew up with World War II films and like, you know, The Great Escape and Stalag 17. Yeah. There was always a commandant in charge of the, you know, the prison. So he says, I love it. Keep it in. But he would. So enough of that. I'm sorry. I'm yapping too much about myself.
No, this is great stuff. And we have about 2 minutes to a break. And I'm hoping we can keep you through the news. Then we'll have a nice chunk
anything
of time.
You want.
All right. Fantastic. I did want to ask you, though, and I'm kind of embarrassed because I've seen Goodfellas about 20 times. And after the Lufthansa heist, all these guys, De Niro or Jimmy Conway, starts bumping people off. I don't remember. Did you get whacked after the Lufthansa heist?
Yes, and it kind of insinuates that it was De Niro's character, Jimmy Conway, and then Jimmy Burke. And, you know, I'm not quite sure if he left it open, like, well, was it them or was it the... was it the higher ups with Paul Sorvino plays? Was it Paul Barrio?
Yeah.
So I'm not speaking history because I don't know, but you kind of leave it there. Is that what's happening? Was it that? I mean, but I was in the dumpster. Remember the Layla?
Oh.
Rolling over.
Yes.
And first three times I was blinking and everything. We had to one Caserta and I and we even had my great stunt double Skeets Don Picard and Nick Giangiulio did Clem, but we did most of our stuff. But you know, and then Don looked over me because it was quite an interesting situation. It's gigantic dumpster. The stunt coordinator was Mike Russo, and it was lifting into a hopper, which you don't see. And the camera was in the hopper, and he showed me that the blades weren't on.
Oh, man. That's
first three
great.
I was blinking like, ah. But yes, and we were covered in all the blood. And that, I believe, the first week we did all the death scenes. You got them all out of the way. Johnny Roast Beef and the Pink Cadillac, that's like 7 hours. Right. I mean, that's how explicit Mike Ballhaus, the cinematographer, and of course, Martin Scorsese, how explicit and detailed as Robert De Niro, and everything he does is so detailed. There's little points where I could tell you sometimes that you knew that they just picked up things that were just so you may not even notice. And my big ad lib in the Lufthansa improv was when we're playing the bowling machine to open it up. I said, Louisiana Lightning for Ron Guidry in 1978, even though
all
I was
right.
in the
Mike, we got to do the news. We're coming right back. Mike Starr is here. He's staying through the news. It's Pete Schwabba and Nightlight. We're hanging out with Mike Starr on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from 6 until 8 p.m. To learn more about this, locally grown radio, WFHR. Pat Kreitlow.
On Monday, Laura Bird is back. The author and tireless bookstore promoter helps mark Independent Bookstore Day with ways you can support a local business.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6.
Spring into deals with fresh savings at Lowe's. Right now, get 5 Stay Green or premium 2-cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. Plus, get up to 35% off select major appliances and save $50 on every $500 you spend on select LG appliances. Shop in-store or online today. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 4/30. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See associate at Lowe's.com for more details or qualifying items. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us. This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM. W248DE Wisconsin Rapids. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Heather Bosch. Another Saturday of hands-off demonstrations around the country protesting Trump administration policies. That demonstration in Washington, D.C. earlier this week, Jeff DeMere gathered with other business owners in Seattle to talk about the impact of tariffs, including the 145% tax on goods from China.
We have a container that's right now sitting in China. That container would cost us $300,000 of extra tariffs, given the 145%.
Immigration is also a flashpoint. Today, the U.S. Supreme Court temporarily blocked the deportation of Venezuelans who are being held under an 18th century wartime law. CBS legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum.
Clearly, the Supreme Court is of the view that illegal